Would you like to know more? Would you like to know more?
Welcome to the Lawmaster Podcast, episode 141 with Paul and Barry and Chris Thor.
Hello. Hello, listeners. How are you? Today's episode is 141, entitled Updated Nippon Army Rules with special guest.
Yeah, Chris with guest.
Good evening. Hello. Mm-hmm.
There he is.
I have to say I'm very honoured to be on this podcast. I've done a lot of podcasts over the last few weeks. And this is the only one where you hardly ever do a guest. So I am very honoured, so thank you.
That's right. That's because the listening pool is very limited.
Somebody's got to make up for the 50% of Paul's attention that we're not getting. Because Paul's obviously doing other things. Because, like, you know, we've only recorded once this month. So what are you doing, Paul?
Hey, man. Like, you know, like,
you can't hide. They can see you. Fucking
Well, they can see me. I don't care. You know, like, it's for free.
For free? You still owe me this year's money.
All right. Okay. Well, you owe me for the NHS.
Yep. Well, you made $3,000 this year or whatever in your 17 different... what do you call
it? I thought we weren't allowed to talk about ourselves for this one.
We're not. So we're talking about Chris and all Chris's stuff this week. So you have to... Yeah. When Chris is talking, we can't talk. That's going to be hard.
Yeah. No, it's fine. I don't mind. I'm used to being interrupted.
Okay. So Chris, tell us what you want to tell us about you and then tell us why you're here, sir.
Okay. I've been playing War Master on and off since it came out, as some of you may know. I was very into it just after it came out, and I played it for probably about 3 or 4 years, and then some of the people in the group that I was playing with kind of went and did other things, and I sold off a few armies and put a lot of stuff that I couldn't sell off at the time because I hadn't discovered eBay back into the loft. And when, you know, we fast forward about 12 or 13 years, when Games Workshop did the End of the World of Warhammer, which I was probably my main game and has been for God knows how many decades. I'd played Warhammer since first edition. And when they did the End of the World stuff, I thought, what is this Age of Sigmar stuff? This is not how I want to play a game. I don't like this. I don't like these models. I don't like the fact that it's clearly been sort of refitted around Games Workshop's intellectual property, etc. And I started looking at other things, and I stumbled across Warmaster. And I was very happy to find this lovely community of nice people who were very different from the kind of people you find in a Games Workshop store. They're not obsessed over stat lines. They're not trying to make an ultra build that will just kill you and stuff like that. People are there to have fun and have a nice time. Barry. And you know, here we are a few years later. It was a happy day when we moved house and I found all the old Warmaster stuff that I couldn't sell back in 2004 in the attic or in the box that we moved into the new attic. And everybody's, and I've said this on the podcast before, everybody's really nice. And in the time that I've played Warmaster, I don't think there's anybody I've met who I genuinely didn't enjoy spending time with or thought, he's a plonker, I don't ever want to see that person again. So it's nice. Really, really good.
Pretty well said. Good words, well said.
But it's true, you know, and there was somebody popped up on Facebook this week who said, I want to get into Warmaster. I'm in Suffolk. Who's there? And I thought, you've plunked yourself down in the best possible part of possibly the world for people to play Warmaster with. Many people are very prominent in the UK scene are right on your doorstep.
Yeah.
Good choice of address.
Mm-hmm. That and a nuclear reactor as well.
Yeah. That's fine. The government says we're fine. It'll be all right.
Yeah, it's fine.
If we've got personal protective equipment for that, it'll be okay.
Was that line in 3.67 rotogen? That's fine. That's safe. You know, it's like that's all the meters go up to.
Chris, why did you want to do the Nippon? Why did you take on the Poison Chalice, man? Because when I was running the rules committee, I didn't want to take on this bastard because it was an unmanageable beast. It's like 17 lists thrown into a melting pot.
Right. Okay. This army started off with something within it. I've always had an interest in Japanese history and culture and some of the mythology around it. It's very, very rich and interesting. You guys did a podcast a while ago where you read through the list and gave some off-the-cuff remarks about what you thought might need to be done with the list.
Yeah.
A couple of people responded on Facebook with very different suggestions about what they thought the list ought to be. And I thought, okay, this somebody needs to take, you know, the helm here, yep, and say, right, we need, yep, to make this into an actual playable army, an interesting faction in Warmaster.
Yep.
Taking on board what Paul often says, that the Warmaster universe has, is it 24 tournament legal factions, Paul?
Something yeah, like? Yeah. I think, yeah, that's right, yeah.
Loads of them. So you have to make something that is tournament legal, something, yeah, that is interesting, and there has to be some compelling reasons to play the list.
Yeah.
And what you guys came up with on the podcast, I thought actually there's enough interesting stuff there. You know, the idea that we want to have a mostly infantry army with a Bretonian style breakpoint calculation, and we don't want to have any wizards. We want to do things something like a runesmith. So from that sort of perspective, that was enough to get started. The fallout from the Facebook discussion, which again you've spoken about in the podcast, there was quite a lot of discussion within the community. What came out from that was our old friend Lex Van Roy. Lex was on the original, what was called Oriental Design Team, which was a group of people who were sort of, they were not Games Workshop employees, but they were influential in developing things for the studio to take on and make into official lists. Lex, please do correct me if I've got it wrong. But my understanding from Lex was that they came up with lots of ideas and then they put them in the studio and the studio messed around with them. For example, the Araby list, according to them, was not supposed to have elephants, but they saw elephants in something else the guys had come up with and they said, oh, that'll be cool, let's put them into that one. The idea, from what I understand from Lex, was there were going to be two lists. There was going to be a samurai list and a list of the temple. The studio's insistence was it was one list. So those of you who've read the old Trial Armies document from 2009, one of the footnotes there, almost as in the sort of Category 3 fan armies, meaning we have not really playtested this at all, or maybe we have playtested it, but the studio messed around with it. I don't know which is the case. They basically had two army lists stuck together. There was a crazy way of calculating breakpoint where you had some units that were designated temple, some that were designated samurai, some that were designated neither. And whichever of temple or samurai you had more of, that counted your breakpoint and nothing else counted. And it was an untidy list. Having said that, I was sort of rooting around looking for models. And I'd picked up some things to do this or that. And when the discussion came along, I said, okay, somebody needs to try and turn this into something that's actually workable. For some reason, you all agreed that I would do it, which I'm very happy to have done. And over the summer and the autumn of last year, the folks on the Rules Committee, we sort of pared it down into something that actually was playable and we hope interesting. And I think it's probably worth saying that when the list came out, when I put that onto the Facebook group about 10 days ago, I was very pleased at the response from everybody. Inevitably, when you do a list like that, or when you do something new that's semi-official, not everybody's going to be happy. And most people were very happy. Some people raised some points. Some people spotted typographical errors, which I was very annoyed about because I'd spent so much time looking through and trying to avoid those. But the list on the whole has been well received by the community with one or two exceptions. And hopefully now we can get it out to a public play test. The folks on the committee, I think we'd have liked to have more play testing done by us, but COVID and other problems have gotten in the way of that. I think it's easy to do crowdsourced play testing rather than leaving it sitting on the shelf for longer than necessary. So put it out into the world and see what happens.
Yeah.
That's good. I keep muting Paul's video audio because he keeps smashing his brush in the pot and it goes like... so every time he goes...
He's expressing his happiness.
I put him on mute and then he has to unmute when he wants to talk. So we don't dilly-ling all the way through. Right. So where do you want to start, Paul? Where do you want to start, Chris?
I think probably it's... There's a couple of things that I've learned and become more appreciative of with this particular project. One is the differences between a Warhammer Fantasy Army list design and Warmaster list design. If you look at the GW Army books from about probably 6th edition Warmaster onwards, the army lists were geared towards miniature sales. So you had core troops, special troops, rare troops, and the way they controlled the number of models in an army was what proportion of the army list you were allowed to spend in points on those different troops. Within each of those designations on the list, you had a zillion options, each of which had a box of models that you could buy. Some of them speculatively had models or list entries assigned to them that they never got around to doing the model for.
I used to love that. That was like, you'd have like goblins on with spears on wolves that never existed. And you go like, well, where am I supposed to get these from?
Do you know what? The best one was the Hyro Titan in the Tomb King list. Some big giant thing that came along. It was supposed to be bigger than a giant, taller than a, you know, whatever. And it was supposed to go and smash everything. And of course, with Games Workshop, those big guys, there was always two entries on the list. So you had to buy two of this 45 or 50 quid box set. You know exactly the list entries I'm talking about. And if you transcribe all of that into Warmaster, Warmaster doesn't do that. There are, and because of the scale of the battles, everything in Warmaster is simplified and abstracted. One of the things I really like about the way the game is set up. So you have there are certain entries, certain generic types of troops. You will have a standard infantry unit, like your Empire Halberdiers, many lists of that. You have a slightly better infantry with a 5-up armor save, which some armies have that as an option, some armies that's the standard infantry. You have some archers, you probably have a few different types of cavalry available. Your army probably doesn't have all of them. If your army does have all of them, you probably don't use all of them. You know, you have the light cavalry, the heavy, the medium cavalry. So if you think about the armor save, 6, 5, 4 armor save, you might have all of them, but you probably don't take all of them. In Warmaster. And so on. Not every list has flyers. Not every list has the sort of ogre-sized, large, monstrous infantry type of entry. And with Warmaster, it's the simplicity of how many per 1,000 points are you allowed, along with the limitation on certain armies not having access to certain troop types. Certain troop types like flyers, like the big scary beasties, the terror-causing mounts. That's how you balance up the lists in Warmaster. Much simpler, actually. And what it means from a list design point of view, you have to sit down and actually think about what unit types do we need this list to have? What does it need to make it fun and playable and different from all the others? Which, when the beta version of the Nippon list came out, some people were upset because we hadn't exactly copied the myriad possibilities of a Warhammer list, where we'd have, and you could quite easily for Nippon, you could find a troop type that would fit every possible conceivable unit type in Warmaster. And you don't, that's one of the points of Warmaster, you can't have everything. Yeah, you couldn't fit it in, and it unbalances the list.
I think I've said before that the older lists and like the kind of what the game is based on, had 8 entries.
Yeah.
And then
you said that a lot. I agree with that.
Some of the lists were having 10, 12, 14 entries. It's like, Jesus Christ. You only needed 8 to make High Elves. You only needed 8 to make Empire and Chaos. How we ended up with 14?
Yeah, but also High Elves are the best entry in their Dragon Riders. That's the best thing to use.
Again, yeah, exactly. And it was, see, they only had seven entries. Seven.
Yeah.
Because one of them.
And lots of special rules that we have done away with over the years.
Yeah, right. So, two, right. So, are you going to be able to share the list, Chris? Right.
So, I think before we read it out, it's worth saying, what did we set out to do? We set out to make a playable and interesting War Master list. We did not set out to make a list that is historically accurate for medieval feudal Japan. There are lists for that work in ancients and medieval. That's fine. Go play that list if you want to. You're very welcome. We also did not set out to make a copy of Warhammer Fantasy. So the list and deliberately some of the fluff here has had to be tweaked because of the desire to avoid having wizards. In the original Trial Armies list, the wizards, they had some bizarre thing with the general's retinue, where you might have had one wizard per army and the wizard knew one spell only. And it was effectively a completely redundant list entry. So for that reason, it was easy to dispense with and say, right, let's copy in. And I think the quote from Rick Priestley is always uppermost in your mind. And the War Master design and simplicity, and you should be copying in things that already have a place in the game. So we've tried to do, I don't want to say copy and paste, but similar entries and similar points values from other lists. And the question really is, what mix of troops do we want to have? So, Barry, should I start with reading out the fluff? Significant background for the army.
Paul, you're on mute.
I'm mute.
So what I do, unless you're talking, you're on mute, yeah, so we can hear Chris, there's not too much static.
Okay, should I, am I reading the fluff?
If you like, yeah. I mean, yeah,
that's your job, yep, go for it.
We'll make the audio better. It's like the Cobra meeting of the government, yeah? Everybody's going to be on mute apart from the person talking.
Okay, cool. War Master Revolution, Nippon.
Hang on. One thing though. Should we share it first on the screen? Do you want me to do it or you do it, Chris?
I can do it.
Okay.
If you turn on my screen sharing? I can't hear you. You've muted yourself.
Yeah.
Should be on.
Yep. There we go. So let's see how well Paul can do Japanese pronunciation.
Yeah, I was just wondering that actually. Fast the east of the old world, even further east than the fabled lands of Cathay, which is what we're going to do next, lie the islands of the Nipponese archipelago. Inhabited by a sophisticated but stoic nation of humans, where warfare is common and honor is everything. Nipponese society is highly structured and is based on feudal rule in strict hierarchy from the emperor, a semi-divine being who is rarely seen in public, down to the lowest peasants who tend the fields. There are many similarities between Nippon and Bretonian society, though dynamable. The Nippon lords are even harsher and uncaring towards anyone they consider to be their inferior than their Bretonian counterparts. The strongest dynamo vie for the position of shogun, supreme military leader of Nippon, answerable only to the emperor himself. Each dynamo maintains a standing army to defend its lands from neighboring warlords and pirate raids. The army is mainly composed of samurai, noble warriors who devote their lives to training in the arts of war. The samurai are supported by the ashigari, soldiers drawn from the common subjects and given basic training and weaponry. More significant threats require several dynamo to contribute forces to the emperor's army under command of a shogun. The Nipponese islands are located in the northern hemisphere of the world on the same latitude as Ufuan, but on the opposite longitude. Many of the magical lines of power which are harnessed into the great vortex of the high elves connect with the planet to Nippon, drawing magical energy away. Thus, the winds of magic are relatively thin in this part of the world, so wizards are few. The Nipponese people are known to be highly stoic people, of whom expressions of emotion are rare. However, this repressed spiritual energy builds up until it manifests itself in a physical form. Many Nipponese mythical creatures are a natural byproduct of these unseen human hopes and fears, which can manifest in the physical form when emotions are strong or prolonged. Smaller creatures are often a nuisance in daily life and are exercised before they become too troublesome by a Shinguja, who sometimes... energy from a magical shrine to assist him in the process. Larger creatures tend to congregate near temples, drawn by the concentration of emotion and energy at these holy sites. In times of war, they become more common, and the Shengjunya of the temple can marshal them into useful fighting forces. But their control over them is limited, and they can disappear back into the magical ether from which they came. The commonest form are Oni, ogres, who are powerful fighters. If the Shengjunya coalesces the energies together into a physical object, such as the Koami, lion dog statues, which guard temple entrances, the objects become a living creature. Larger creatures can be created if the temple's abbot coalesces the energies into larger objects. These colourful creatures bolster the Nipponese army against significant threats facing the whole nation. Then we go into chat about what each of these types are. Are we doing that now?
Okay. I mean, do we like the background and the fluff?
Yeah. Where did you get it from, Chris?
My problem here was that somebody on a podcast says they've got no wizards, and then you've got to retcon it into the fluff.
Yeah.
So I spent a lot of time staring out of the window on planes over the summer last year, and that was the idea that I had to explain away why they have no wizards, but the Cathay guys next door have normal wizards. So I blamed the high elves.
Which is always a good bet.
Yeah, always good.
Damn elves.
They're like breaking everything.
But otherwise, I mean, it seems like it's the idea behind this sort of coalescence of emotional energy. It's you read Harry Potter. I should have thought this idea. You remember the Boggart in Harry Potter?
Yeah. Yeah.
This thing that appeared as this sort of physical manifestation of something you heard of. And I thought, okay, that's not a bad idea. And let's see if somebody who can manipulate that and turn it into something useful as fighting troops, then we've got that. You've got to have, with anything Japanese, you've got to have Oni, so these sort of mythical ogre-type demons. You've got to have Komainu, so these nice decorative lion dog statues that guard the entrance to many of the temples. It's two very, very typical things that are very common in Japanese mythology. And it was a convenient way of explaining all the kind of stuff, but also not closing anything off if somebody decides to write a temple list later on that we can have these creatures and some other stuff potentially as well. So it was written kind of with that, you know, what do we need right now and what might we want to do later, so we don't have to go back and rewrite the rewrite.
Okay, right. Okay, so we're going to Ashigari. They're just your like halberdier type fellas, aren't they?
Yep, so Ashigaru, meaning light of foot, common foot soldiers, lightly armed, minimal military training. Sometimes they fight like standard infantry who have been trained in, goodness me, there's a typo there again. That's not good.
I mean, do they
some have fight shoes? Like standard infantry, whilst others have been trained in the use of bows to harass the enemy from a distance. Firearms have become popular in Nippon in recent years due to their ability to penetrate enemy armor. Though their numbers are limited by the expense of the weapons. So again, taking some of the suggestions from the initial Facebook comments, we initially wanted to have just the foot troops and the bowmen, but essentially handgunners became an option. Samurai, or a class of noble soldiers and officers, drawn from important families in the service of a feudal lord or daimyo. Samurai undergo extensive training in all forms of martial arts and horsemanship, and take an unbreakable oath of loyalty to their master when they complete their training. Their lives are governed by Bushido, a strict code of honor and military prowess. Samurai would rather die than face the shame of breaking this code of honor. Brackets in the War Master world, they prefer to fight on foot, but some choose to go back into battle on horseback for a more mobile attack. Lots of discussions about what historical samurai may or may not have done, but the reason for the list being the way it is, we wanted to have an infantry-heavy version similar to the Bretonian way, but rather than it being all cavalry, you have the infantry counting for these infantry counting for the breakpoint.
Okay.
Now, one of the controversial things of the previous is the Ronin. Ronin are and were former samurai who are or were prevented from serving a new master without permission from their previous master, by the Bushido code. So basically in feudal Japan, if you were a samurai and your master was killed or disgraced, you were still under oath to him and he was not in a position to release you. So you were kind of stuck. And many of them were forced to survive and acting as mercenaries. In the previous list, they were unlimited in their quantity with identical stats to the samurai. And of course, you can see where the problem is going to arise with that. It just was too easily exploitable. Mr. Janaway, bless him, won a tournament using the original version of the list, taking into account that he can win a tournament probably with goblins or skaven. I think that's what we have to give him this year when we resume normal.
He's doing goblins,
right? Okay, he'll win with them, but he's just good at playing with it. But certainly, Janner's build had a huge number of these equally good and completely expendable troops from the original list. Now, what we put in here, the Ronin are somewhat resentful of their current position, and the daimyo doesn't really care about them, so they don't count towards the breakpoint. But there's a bit of a negatrait when we come to reading the list out. An obvious omission, actually, from the original version of the list was ninja. And, you know, you can't have gutter runners in a Skaven armor without there being ninja somewhere in the list here. So ninja are clans of stealthy warriors who specialize in all forms of espionage, deception, and covert warfare. Their clandestine behavior is considered dishonorable and thus beneath the noble samurai. However, the samurai lords treat them with a sensible level of respect, not wishing to turn them into enemies. They're often hired as spies and assassins, and in times of war, bands of ninja often infiltrate behind enemy lines to deliver surprise attacks. So we thought that we were a little bit concerned that there were too few units that would count towards the breakpoint. If you're the Nippon Daimyo, you don't want to chuck away all these samurai, because ninja clan lord is going to come and probably kill you for disposing of his best troops. So therefore, they do count towards the break and shouldn't be committed lightly. Next up, the Oni, heavenly ogres, coalesce into large amounts of angry, hostile energy. Single Oni appear occasionally during peacetime, but in times of significant threat to the whole of Nippon, large quantities of warlike energy makes it possible for a Chugenja to create whole units of them, which fight alongside the human troops. The magic energy used to bind them can prove unstable under battlefield conditions. So, spoiler alert, they have the same instability rules as a demon army. Which is, depending on your point of view, again, some of the discussion, some people feel it's too much of a wild card to deal with. Other people say, yeah, it doesn't really matter. What the hell, if the troops disappear, it's fine.
Could you come back then? There's no way to raise them back up?
No, significantly, actually. And in the rules for the Shugenja, we've tried to take that into account to balance up the instability table with a little bit of a buff if the Shugenja is near the unit rather than being far away, in which case, yeah, they're going to disappear and you don't have a way of summoning extra ones. Okay, the Komainu, large stone lion dog statues usually seen guarding the entrances to Nipponese temples. In times of war, Shugenja is able to coalesce aggressive energy onto the statues and create fighting troops as a result. The result of creation is effective, but sometimes short-lived. Again, in the original list, these things had a phenomenally good armor save. I think it was 3+, something really crazy, because they're basically stones, animated stone statues. And to keep things consistent with the, 4+, the original profile was 2, 3, 4+, for 90 points, which is a little bit too good. So we adopted the profile of Demon Hounds, same instability, same everything, and that was a little bit more balanced, again, to keep things similar with other armies. The Tengu in the original list were bird-like wood demons who could magically transport themselves from wood to wood. And you looked at them and you thought, this is a nice idea, but somebody has not had time to finish off the thoughts on this unit. So Dave Susco, who some of you know from Warmonger Miniatures, Dave had provided us with an alternative version of a Nippon list that his game group had been using for a few years, which basically had Tengu as flyers, as copies of the essentially Chaos and Dark Elf Harpies, And we thought, yeah, that's a good place to start. And I should actually say that Dave's List was a very good place to start some of the building work that we did in terms of what we kept, what we got rid of. So a lot of the troops went by the wayside, the warrior monks, the imps, some of the other temple creatures. We thought, okay, let's get rid of those. We'll put them in a temple list if we ever do one, but let's just focus on the samurai list. So I think, Paul, do you want to read out the army selector? And you and Barry can do your comments and I can tip in.
I don't know if you mentioned Chris, but if you're ninja, like you mentioned gutter runners, I'm sure it's in the fluff that they learn their art in a foreign land. I think I'm pretty Nippon is named as that. So it's like that totally fits, yeah. Cool. Okay, so arm list, here we go. So Ashigari, so they're your halberdier profile at three attacks, three hits, arm save six. Minimum one, maximum nothing, 45 points. So, that's a very common stat line in army and list in other armies. Your Ashgai Bowman, your 3-1, your Crossbowman, your 3-1, 30. Sorry, the normal ranges, hits a three, 55 points. So that's a straight out of an Empire list. It's the same types of units.
Interesting. It's interesting. Then there's no mid of those because halberdiers are normally minimum two, and crossbowmen minimum two. Oh, I think we might have lost Chris.
Am I still there? Hello.
Yeah, you're back. Hello.
Right. Hello.
Because the Nippon army could build it with a lot of these common soldiers that you've been press ganged into fight as in fight for you, or you could build it as a more elite samurai more army list with only a minimum of retainers.
Hey, what's our next one?
Ashigai Teppo. So they are infantry. They've got three attacks and one shooting attack. And they have basically there for 10 points, they're the same as the bowman above, but for 10 points more, you get a special rule, which is armor piercing handgunners. So that fits in with the fluff that some of them carry guns.
Yeah. Fair enough.
So the rock stars are your samurai, so your infantry who have four attacks, three hits because they're humans, they've got five up armor save, they're 80 points. You have to take at least three, so that means in a 2,000 point list you're going to have six units of samurai, and they have the special rule two, which is Bushido. Samurai live by strict codes of honor and ideals. Their troops do not lose in face, so they cannot use their initiative to evade. Fair enough. They roll one less drive back dice. Fair enough. And they must pursue of winning a combat. They are not obliged to advance the enemy destroyed, nor must pursue fortified. But having to pursue is as I said before, anything that takes away the control of a unit is essentially a mega trait. So sometimes you'll have to pursue, maybe perhaps if you didn't want to. Then moving on.
So they're interesting, Paul, because they've changed a lot.
Yeah, they have because
they used to have ranged weapons.
Yeah. What I should have said was that we started off with the army rules, so the feudal rule. So Nippon Army calculates when it must withdraw from battle in different from other armies, only counts in with samurai cavalry, and ninjas. So the main thing about samurai is that they're your breakpoint.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, a couple of things have I made to say about that.
Yeah.
The original samurai profile was they were 3-1, 3-5, and hopefully Barry, you can see the original list thing on the screen now. There were 85 points, and they had two special rules: honor bound and stoic. And I thank Dave Susco for simplifying that into something that's actually workable, because you had to have some rules for the samurai, you had some rules for the ronin. And what his version of the list did was actually get rid of the special rules for the Ronin and make them work, and just make the samurai subject to these rules. There was a lot of discussion about how many attacks they should have, should they get extra attacks when they're charging. One of the special rules gave them extra attacks when they were charging. And we realized, again, with the Warmaster idea of keeping things simple, that we just gave them an extra attack all the time, took away some of the special rules. So they ended up having essentially Lizardmen Saurus stats. That stat line, Barry, you're very familiar with it, at 75 points. We added 5 points on for all the other stuff. There are some positive traits, there are some negative traits, but overall we felt that 80 points was, we thought, a reasonable point value to put on them.
But the 75 points for the Lizardmen isn't true because they've got a big nega trait on them.
Yeah, you've got the cold-blooded thing. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. So they're probably, 80 points is probably fair.
All in all, and this is the point of having some wider playtesting, we want to find out what everybody thinks of that. Should we have them being larger point value, smaller point value? We don't know. We think it's okay, but please, we need some feedback when you've had a go with it. The other thing I should comment about is the minimum maximum troops. We would have liked to have a larger number of Ashigaru, so the dispensable minimum troops. But we realized, actually, if you total up 3 units of samurai plus the Ashigaru, you end up with a total of 295 points per 1,000, which is actually the highest minimum troop requirements, putting the general to one side, but it's the highest minimum troop requirements of all the Warmaster armies. If you look at it, the next highest, surprisingly, is Albion at 255, and then I think it's Bretonnia at 245, where there's certain things that you have to take and you can't get away from it. So again, the balance, we'll be interested to see how it plays out in the playtesting, but the idea was to have an infantry-heavy army, and you had to take a sensible number of the troops that counted towards your breakpoint. So some of the discussion in the Facebook group when the list came out was about, you know, why isn't this, why isn't it that? And we thought it was better to weight it towards the non-expendable troops, the ones that counted towards the break, than having a list where you could just spam out a load of expendable things. Like, and there are Bretonnian builds where you can do that. So just in case you're wondering why it's like that, it is deliberate to make you take that number off the core troops of this fantasy brackets, not historical Japanese army.
Okay. Right. So let's go back to the other page.
Oh, sorry, we're not on the other page. I beg
no, you. We're on the
I thought we'd flip back to it. Okay, there we go. Sorry.
All right. Paul, unmute.
Paul's better when he's muted.
Plus, it firmly.
You have to say it again.
All right. Well, making samurai like minimum three, like it firmly IDs the army as you're gonna see a lot of samurai in a Nippon list, and samurai, that profile of an infantry, that counts towards is a unique breakthrough. It makes them different, and it makes them an interesting choice. So yeah, totally behind that. But if you've given them four attacks, that means there is like comparable to Empire skirmishers. So yeah, perfect.
It also means you can't build it with break two, can you? Like Janice used to. The minimum.
Yeah. That's right. Okay, so the next unit on the roster is samurai cavalry. So is that profile mounted for 30 points? So it goes to 110, minimum zero, maximum four. I mean, you'd be struggling to take 8 units of samurai cavalry, but I suppose it's theoretical. You know,
these used to have a shooting attack, so that was a conscious decision to lose shooting attacks throughout all samurais. Yeah.
The logic behind that was it's a nice idea that they can shoot, but the points uplift is about 20 odd points really to turn them into shooting troops. And you know, if you look at the army list there, you'll see that the Ashigaru bowmen versus Ashigaru, it's only 10 points, but one has a 6-up armor, one has a 5-up armor. So it tends to end up with about 20 odd points to make troops shoot.
Or you have to lose armor.
This is an interesting thing. Jim has done a lot of work on this list, and I want to thank him for his work and his always very positive and sensible, well thought out suggestions. Jim has suggested that this might be something that we incorporate as a unit upgrade or whatever number of points you can have samurai that are able to shoot. So it may become a unit upgrade rather than a separate list entry. We'll see. Again, playtest the list and see how it goes.
Well, we've already got 10 units, so I think we're going to
have. But that's why it can be a unit upgrade rather than a separate entry, because I like your idea of keeping lists short and not flabby. So the idea of having a core troop that counts towards your minima and then an upgrade for it, to me, is better than, and more simple than having something that you have one troop type and then another one, which is a minimum zero, maximum zero, and it's just another thing on the army list. So
tempo are an upgrade, aren't they, really?
We felt that there shouldn't be, it was illogical. Chris Bingwall in Sweden, Chris made a good point that there's no logic in having an optional upgrade for a limited number of units to something that you have no minimum, no maximum on. Yeah. So that's why it's written like that. Otherwise, the original, one of the first drafts had it written like the Empire way, where you can upgrade some crossbowmen to handgunners.
Okay, cool. So the next entry is Ronin. So your Lawless Samurai, who have the 4 attacks, the 3 hits. They've got less armor, but 6 up. They're 60 points, and they have a special rule 3, which is Ronin. Bushido Code of Honor prevents them from serving a new master, as Chris explained earlier. They are resentful of the Code of Honor that prevents them living a normal life. And they are unconcerned about losing face in the samurai counterparts and tend to act as they see fit in the balance. It's represented with a negative on command penalty when receiving orders. Ooh, right. Okay, so they have the same rule as trolls.
It's harsh.
What the general here is command 9, not like the orc army where it's command 8.
Okay, but they are just more, they are just what are they, orc boys, aren't they?
Yes.
And the samurai, now samurai cavalry are just boar boys. So there's nothing in this list yet that's new. It's just repurposed other stat lines from other lists.
But that's what we want.
Well,
yeah,
actually, Barry, if you go through all the army lists, there are very few unique entries. There are many, many things that are exactly the same. I haven't done the full spreadsheet on it yet. But there's lots of things that are the same profile and same points value, which again I like. It's nice and simple.
Yeah, so I mean, these guys being orc warriors, do they need a negative trait? I don't know. They're already warriors, aren't they?
I suppose. But it's I mean, it's reflected in their points value, I think, isn't it? Really, like
on the basis of the playtest that's been done so far, and again, thank you to Jim, thank you to Janice for spending a couple of days bashing out the list and abusing it in the way that only certain people can. The feedback from them, they really didn't like the -1 command penalty on the unit. They thought there was enough negative stuff on the unit already, and the -1 command penalty was enough to put them off taking too many of them. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how other people respond. The people who Anna Dragas, who's on the Facebook group, Anna's produced an initial list based on her thoughts, and she said, I quite like some of the samurai things, but I don't want to take any off the on in the commander, because I think the negative rate there is too much to manage. And it'll be interesting to see what everybody initially thinks, what the first builds are, and what they actually will play the list with. And then we can tweak it or leave it as it is. So, I don't know, we'll see.
Okay, right, Paul, unmute. Come on, get used to it. So you just mute and unmute, come on. Push the fucking button.
Maybe it's best that Barry does mute and unmute.
I can't unmute him, it won't let me. Press unmute.
It's the story of your life, isn't it, Barry?
When you're not talking, mute, and when you're talking, unmute.
Well, yeah, I can only press the button when it's there.
Well, it should always be there. It's the top corner in the little 3 dots.
Yes, no, don't push the video button, Paul. No, just it's the one with the microphone on.
So what happens, Paul, because we're all listening on our speakers, nobody's got headsets, and we're all talking into the mic, it gets a feedback loop, and the more mics are open, the noisier the background gets.
All right.
Okay. Again. Bye. Anyway, so what's the next one?
Right, what's the next entry? Right, ninja.
Right, okay. Like, I'm not the. All right, fine. Right. So, next entry is Ninja. And they have exactly the same stat line as Gutter Runners, which is a 3-1 range 15 shooting attack, a 6 up armor save for 70 points. And their special rule is the Gutter Runner, well, range 15 and the Gutter Runner infiltrate rule.
Yeah, which is written down there in the thing. A couple of interesting things there. I agree completely. We can't have a Nippon army without these guys, because where else have the Gutter Runners learned their skills from, as Paul's already said? Again, some interesting discussion in the Facebook group. Somebody suggested, one of the Polish guys suggested, that these guys should not have a negative trait in a negative command penalty in dense terrain. And that makes sense. And Lex then joined in the discussion and said, actually, when they did the Skaven list originally, they left that in as a deliberate thing to counteract the fact that you can pop up these infantry behind enemy lines. You can pop them pretty much anywhere you feel like, as long as the terrain to pop them up in. So the fact that they don't ignore command penalties in dense terrain for Gutter Runners is a deliberate inclusion in the Skaven list. And because we've copied these from Gutter Runners, we'll go with that for the moment and see where we get to. One could argue that they're more disciplined, they're better trained. But on the other hand, we want to try and keep things as generic as possible to try and eliminate the amount of time and reduce the amount of time you spend with your head in a rule book playing Warmaster. So therefore, we'll go with the copy of the Gutter Runners for the moment. Because Paul, you know how easy it is to get Gutter Runners to appear where you want them to, don't you? I've played Skaven. Yeah, you never do what you want them to, ever. Even though the general is a command man general as well as the...
Yeah, but he's got... once you've got the things up, it's then ordering them again to do something. That's the problem with Skaven. But I mean, your point there are they too elite to like the same... Well, same rule. But you could say equally, the ninjas, they're not going to train with the Shogun in his samurai. They're not going to like go to like planning meetings. They're like... Right, you dirty, dishonourable people, go off there and assassinate stuff, whatever the things you've got pyjama wearing idiots do. It's like they're not going to be part of an O group, are they?
No, can I say, like the fact that they count towards break, I think that really kind of reins them in.
Yeah, if they didn't, they'd be abused, because you could shove them forward on suicidal attacks, like charging, artillery lines. But because they do count for break, no, that's exactly what they had to be.
One of the interesting comments that we had within the rules committee was when they count towards the break. And again, it might be interesting to see if they, again, during playtesting, this is not part of the list, but you could do it if you wanted, if they count towards the break point only after they've been deployed. So if you haven't deployed them, they don't count towards your break. And when you put them on the table, then they do. So if they, I'm trying to imagine the situation where all the samurai would get committed early on before the ninja had a chance to deploy. But it's an interesting idea that they only are something that will count towards the defeat of the whole army after you put them down on the table and committed them.
Well, it would then only count towards your total break when they're on the table.
Yeah.
So it would be a case of, they don't count towards any bit of your break, the total break or how much break you've lost or whatever. They can only count when on the table, mate.
Interesting but complicated.
Yeah.
And you need to choose which one you want.
Yeah. Okay, so the next list looks like ogres to me. The Oni. They have infantry, they have 4 attacks, 4 hits, 5 up armor, 105 points, minimum nothing, maximum 1. They have rule 5. Which is, another page, temple demons. So instead of having the ogre must always charge humans kind of rule, they have the demon instability rules from the demonic list, where once they've lost stands, they start rolling. The worse, they lose stands, or they become confused, or lose a stand. And then the best result is they act out of initiative. Basically, they come charging in.
Hang on a second. So They're immune to terror?
Yes, they are. They're demons. They're demons. Sorry, that also says they're immune to terror.
Okay, so, I mean, that's cool. But once they start losing stands, shit gets real quick and you can't replace the stands. So.
Mm-hmm. However, when we come to the Shugenja rules, if the Shugenja was in 20 centimetres, you get plus one on the instability table. So basically, if you have a Shugenja and you keep it close to those troops, they're not going to lose any stands.
Oh, that sounds strong. Jesus. Can I get as a demon upgrade? That would be good.
Barry, in the demon army, you have demon sorcerers who can summon extra stands. In this army, there's no wizards. So there had to be something in, because otherwise you wouldn't take a unit that would start just decomposing itself after you start losing stands.
Yeah, that's what I imagine. Balance up
for the whole overall army negative problem of not having any wizards.
One thing I would say about demons, for all you potential demon players, is the chance you get to raise the new stands is before you'd want it to happen. You try and do it in your spell phase, then you've got your combat phase, then you've got the next person's combat phase, and then it comes back round. And if there's anything left after you've rolled your instability, then you get another chance. You've had like a lot of rounds of combat between one chance to raise a stand and the next.
Basically. Yeah, but on the flip side, you get to raise back stands of demonic beasts.
Or demonic flyers, yeah, you do, yeah.
But come on, that you have a dispel scroll for when your opponent does raise demons or summon demons on the unit of beasts. That's what you keep it for, please.
He fights the beasts anyway. Nobody fights them. Nobody wants that fight. Right, come on then.
So the next unit is the Kaminaru. Yeah, like they're three attacks, three hits, five up armor. They're 70 points, so they're medium cavalry profile. Minimum nothing, maximum two, and they too have the demonic, the temple demons, that means they're immune to terror, and they are the demon instability rule.
So they're 90 points, they're demon hounds.
Okay. The last one is your Tengu, which is a monster. So this is a straight Harpies profile. Two hit, two attacks, three hits. Five up armor. No, that's better armor save than the Harpies. They're 80 points. You can have a minimum nothing, maximum one. They have the demons rule of this list, which is fine. And also six, saying Tengu, which means they can fly and they are based long ways to make them, you know, not all.
So basically, they are demon flyers rather than being Pegasus Knights. Pegasus Knights would be nice, but a bit too good. And they're unstable, which is interesting. We'll see how that goes in the playtesting. The Tengu are a little bit different in terms of, if we look at sort of classical Japanese mythology, some different opinions on the Facebook group about exactly what they are and what they do. But the instability, we'll see whether that's too much of a negative for them to have. Or maybe they're just the flyers of the army. And being long edge based flyers is a negative trait enough. Because I know, Barry, you love your long edge based flyers.
It's hard to find someone to attack with them because they're just too wide, aren't they? They don't need to go in.
So we go move on to the characters now. So the Shogun is a general, a Command 9 general of 125 points. He has a rule 10. This is quite interesting. So the Shogun rule. The Shogun is the supreme general, answering only to the emperor himself. Such an exalted position, a sub-commander of the Shogun's army, suffers significant embarrassment if they make a mistake, which affects their standing in front of their noble samurai troops. So if a Nippon hero rolls a double six when issuing orders, the player must roll on the blunder table with a further negative one on the result. This table indicates you must be crazy result. The negative one penalty must be applied to a samurai or samurai cavalry unit if a unit of these troops was being ordered, or was a brigade being ordered. If there was more than one of these units present, the Nippon player may choose which is affected. So if their subordinates blunder, they're more likely to get that's a permanent like negative one command penalty on somebody. Oh, and you've got samurai as well, it's on them. Love it, that's fantastic.
Okay, when we did this, I really, really, really wanted them to have the Dark Elf blunder rule. I play Dark Elves a lot. I play Dark Elves very badly, as many of you know. But this rule, darker blunder rule, fits so nicely with that, you know, do it correctly or die kind of Japanese mythology and Japanese historical thing. And I put this to the rules committee and they said, no, this is just ridiculously unfair. We need to tone it down a bit. So what you've got there is the least bad penalty that we could come up with for blundering orders. But I still think they should have the darker blunder rule. It just fits so well with the fluff.
Yeah. But,
you know, it's a democracy. You have to go with it, everybody.
They're only leadership nine. You can't start.
That was the original, yeah. The Shogun was supposed to be a command 10 general. I'm not quite sure whether it was a general lack of wanting another command 10 general in the game. For the record, I don't have a problem with command 10 generals as long as there's enough stuff to balance them up. And here you've got troops that might disappear with not much you can do to try and balance it up. The Shugenja may not be in the right place at the right time to stop that all critical blunder roll or instability table roll. And the command 10, I think command 10, do what I say or die. And again, it fits very much what I think is the fluff, but we're going with what everybody felt like and or felt was appropriate. So again, let's see what it works out in playtesting.
Yeah. It's still a cool rule. I mean, I agree with you, Chris, on this one. Like, as in, totally. Like, as in, I love them. I wish that Dark Elf Blunder rule was in Skaven armies. I'd be like, I start executing my own characters. That's fantastic. Yeah, like, it's a very good compromise, I think, actually. I really enjoyed, like, that as a concept. That's fantastic. So, we have your hero list, which is Dynamo. Your heroes, which are 80-point Command 8 heroes. You know, nothing different about them. Then your Shengaru, which is a hero for a Command 8 for 90 points. And he has this Rule 7, which means that he's your Runesmith. So he's got the same Runesmith rules of dispelling on range 50 centimetres. So it's, you know, that's an important distinction. It's not 60, it's 50. And also he adds this +1 to rolls, the demonic instability table, if he's within 20 centimetres or the affected demon unit. So that means that a unit of demons in this list that has lost one stand can't lose another stand to an instability roll. But it could still do it if it had lost two stands. Is that right, Chris?
I think so, yes. So this is how we balanced up the fact that you can't summon more demons. If you keep the magic user who has summoned or coalesced them together close to the unit, then he can control them better, and hopefully it should work out well. Again, it's an interesting twist on the Runesmith rules. The Runesmith, it's an interesting distinction. They are not wizards, they are heroes, so they have command radius of 60 rather than 20, which is useful for making the update to command the army, but they have these other things to do with dispelling anti-magic. So basically, read dwarf Runesmith. If you read the first version of the list, you will see that I forgot to swap the word Runesmith for one of the entries for Shugenja, which is on the shrine thing, which I've now...
Oh, yes. Corrected.
The number of times I've read this, I seem to be blind to those typographical goblins that creep in and change the letters after you print it or send it out.
Mm-hmm. There's a shrine, which is the character mount of the list. For 50 points, you get rule, which is only a single shrine, and it's incorporated into a stand of the Shengaja, what we're just talking about. Gives a +1 to a dice roll once per game for a dispel, so it would dispel a spell on a 3+, which you would declare before you roll, I'm going to do this thing. In addition, can invoke the gods of the shrine during the shooting phase. Invocation fills the Nippon army with even greater resolve. On a d6 on a 4+, all Nippon units within 20 centimetres of the Shengarai are unaffected by terror. So that is the same as the anvil, smashing it to make you terror immune. Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And the difference there is that is all that the anvil does, but it's not limited to once a game. And so what you've done is made it once a game and giving him a different buff as well. Yeah. Cool. So the last thing,
the reason for that was the original version of the list had two shrines, which were essentially a 50 centimeter wide anti-magic bubble in which you could cast no spells against that advancing army, which was let's say interesting, which it was ridiculously overpowered. And Barry, you were right to point that out and say
it's nuts. It was nuts. You couldn't beautifully tussled up. You couldn't do anything. The bloody thing shut you down.
I'm surprised that Jadders didn't win the tournament with that version of the list, but he just chose to spam up the Ronin on the time that he won the tournament with the Nippon list.
Right, and then the final entry is just a Wyvern, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a Wyvern. A Tatsu, which is a +2 attack, 80-point mount. It can ride a Tatsu. It's a kind of dragon. Means it can fly. They cause Sarah an extra 2 attacks, though, as the rider.
Yep. So nice. It's basically the Griffin stats from the Empire list. Your challenge, if you choose to accept, is to find a beautiful, suitably Japanese-looking dragon and find something you can stick a rider onto. So it's a modelling project if you wish to have that in your army.
And then there's and what I printed out, then there's two pages of designer's notes. I mean, to be honest, Chris, I think you've said the designer's notes as
we yeah, begin. I think we have, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the designer's notes. I like that in the trial armies list, saying why do we do it this way? Really, it's for somebody who's coming to just read the document, who's not been familiar with all the conversations, and they can understand why we did it this way. I think it's probably worth saying that this list, it says there in red above the army selector, it's a playtest list. We've tried it out as much as we can within all the limitations of the crazy world that we're in at the moment. We'd argued about things back and forth for several months before we came to this list. And we want people in the community to play the list and to tell us what they think. To help you with that, we have two means of you using the list and playing it. So for the listeners, Barry, I'm just going to try and share my screen again. And if I put up this, so there's a set of tokens.
Ooh.
Can you see the tokens, Barry?
Oh, yeah. You might need to scroll down to your table. Yeah, lovely.
Tokens, right. So we've got, there we go. Right, so we've got some tokens. These are on the group files of the War Master Facebook group. These all have a little letter V pointing towards the edge that the unit's facing. They've got some pictures of what the unit's supposed to represent. They've got, I think if you print out maybe 3 pages, you've probably got enough to cover most 2,000 point builds. The image credits, I should thank Magister Millistum. Magister Militum, my Latin teacher would correct me on my pronunciation, for the samurai, the Ashigaru, the Ronin, the ninjas, the samurai cavalry, the Kumainu, and the Shogun and some of the characters, the Oni, the Tengu, the Shrine, the Shugenja, alternative armies, who mostly do 15mm models. They've got a very, very rich source of the fantasy version of the models on the list. And those are probably two companies that you can look to for models. I nicked all these images off their website and without any permission from them at all. I doubt they would say no, but if you're using those tokens and then you're going to upgrade your tokens to the actual army, say thank you to them for using their tokens and my stolen images by actually buying their models.
These tokens, just if you print them out and then just mount them on bases, they work really well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Better.
If your printer gives you options for, it's a PDF, so if you print it at 100% exact scaling, it'll print out at 40 by 20. If you print it out with fit to page, it might print it a little bit smaller. But my recommendation for this is you print them out and you stick them onto like MDF bases and off you go. It's really, really easy to do. We'd really like everybody to try out the army, try out lots of different builds. If you want to try different variations on the list, the points and things, again, please do that. I'd recommend you try our version of the list first before you try any of the variations so that you can see. It's kind of like, it's a frequently occurring argument in our house. I read a recipe and I want to cook the recipe. My wife says, no, that'll not work. Change that. And I say, how do you know how it was supposed to taste unless you meant the way they said? And we go off into an argument. But try it the way that we've suggested and then see what else you might want to come up with. We want all the feedback, please. Ideally, the best way to do that is via the Facebook group. Post up the list that you had, any variations that you played. Tell us what happened. Tell us, you know, which units got lost, what the break was, all those kind of things. So some nice battle reports. Our hope is that we can have this as a tournament legal faction for the tournaments for 2021 and onwards. The other way you can play it, Ross Patton, again, to thank Ross, before we put this out to public beta test, I'd contacted him and said, can you put this into the tabletop simulator version of the game? And he said, yeah, no problem. And within about a couple of hours of me posting the tokens, he put those up onto the tabletop simulator. So Ross, really, I apologize for the rather crap quality of the images on the PDF. I wanted to send slightly better ones, but I don't want to make you redo the work. So thank you for doing it in such a short space of time. So also a remote play, and Barry, probably you can talk a little bit about tabletop simulator and how you get it to work for Luddites like me who can't tell the difference between an iPad and Etch-a-Sketch.
You just basically you have to spend some time learning the system, unfortunately. So there isn't
any... Do you work in tech support? Is your solution turn it off and on again?
No.
Spend time. That's not what I want. I want like a step-by-step idiot's guide.
The best way to learn, I promise, I've played maybe like eight nights on this, is you have to play a game with somebody and they'll tell you how to do stuff in the game.
Right, okay.
And then you learn how to play the game. There's no way you can just load this up and learn it on your own.
I've discovered that.
It's a nightmare.
So go back to this whole thing. I mean, I think it's really good, personally. I mean, if I was running an event right now, like I would allow that. You know, like I'd be like, yeah, I'm running this event, and yeah, this is something I'm allowing. Let's what better like environment to find out about it? So I mean, I see no issues personally with that as an arbitrist. I totally get your decisions. Like I understand. Like okay, yeah, cool, fantastic. That's why you've chosen to do that way. The old list clearly had problems. You know, like which we saw. Like, you know, from Janice is like, yeah, okay, that's not very good. Like, that can be abused. I don't see any issues with that, with what you've done. I mean, it looks funny. To me, it's a quality bit of work.
I have to say, I'm very happy that this is generally well received in the community. I know that you can't put anything out and have 100% approval rating, but people seem to be happy with this as a place to go forwards. And again, coming back to what we tried to achieve, to make an interesting, unique list, yep. Something with a compelling reason to play it. And that might not fit some of the other versions of Nippon or classical Japanese mythology, but at the end of the day, it's to try to fit it into Warmaster. Paul, you very regularly say, we have 20-something factions, why do we need any more? So therefore, we have to have a good reason for doing this one.
Yes.
And I'm happy with what we've all produced. I'm proud of it because it's a nice harmonist.
Is you would say, so why do I want to play Nippon? Well, I've got a thing for Japanese culture for a start, so the aesthetics I like, but also I really like I like an army that has a different approach and a break point, and it's like Bretonians I know of, Nippon are an alternative. How are they different from Bretonians? They don't have any 4+ armor saved cavalry. They don't have an abundance of the knights that is known for Bretonian. They don't have, you know, but what they do have is that breakpoint held into samurai warriors. It is different. It is not Bretonians of a different sort or something else or some weird because of a loophole in the rules that like you can like spam a unit that is not what it's supposed to be. Yeah, for me, it's quality. It's fantastic.
You did a good job, Chris. Good job. I was supposed to be playing Phil, OG Phil, over the weekend. So if I can find the samurai tokens, I will play him using samurai.
Okay. Following on, Paul, from what you just said about Bretonians, again, one of the comments that came up with the Facebook group was that samurai army should have more cavalry, and it should be cavalry heavy. And when I was buying the models and putting together my army that will eventually, before the end of time, become painted, I thought, okay, what can I actually proxy this to in the official tournament legal lists? And actually, there's a very easy way to proxy the models you buy for Samurai Army to a Bretonian list. Very, very easy. You know, you've got the Ashigaru as the men-at-arms, the bowmen, the peasants. I recommend you buy any medieval European peasants and paste them any way you want. Doesn't matter. You've got your the samurai foot troops. You probably need to leave them behind. But you've got your cavalry. Those become the Bretonian knights. And it becomes quite easy. If you want to play a cavalry-heavy version of the Nippon list, then proxy it to the Bretonian list. And it worked very, very nicely for that. Mm-hmm. So, and again, I'm very, because my painting time is quite limited, I quite like armies that I can use for two or possibly even, I'm lucky, three different lists. On the, again, on the Facebook group, some John Braceby from Cromedy Forge said, you know, some of these things proxy quite well to the samurai ratmen army that he has. And, you know, the storm vermin could be your samurai, Plan Rat could be your Ashigaru, and you can. And he's got a rat cavalry unit that has no entry in the.
Which he just made because he liked it, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just fancied doing it. You might need to find someone to do the squires with. Squires in the Nippon proxy version could be your samurai cavalry with bows. In the ratmen version, because you can think, you know, Clan Eshin came to Nippon. They had subdued some human troops. So in fact, you could possibly use human models for the Ashigaru. You could use your rats, the ratmen for the samurai troops. And you could find some small rats from a different manufacturer, and those are your squires. So with a little bit of creative and lateral thinking, you can really do a lot of proxying. And for me, that's one of the most things I like most about War Master, that you can, with a bit of imagination, do all sorts of builds, all sorts of armies, with all sorts of models. And when this comes up on the Facebook things, I always say, you know, as long as your opponent is clear of what the unit represents at the beginning of the game, then go for it. Go crazy. The original inspiration for me with this was Lex's version of a Kislev army, where everything was proxied with Orc and Goblin units. It's bonkers. But you can see the parallels, and you can see, okay, this proxies for that, this proxies for that, the bears. It's a great idea.
I'm probably doing the most obvious like example of that right now, is I'm painting my Bretonians as Knights Templar, because I'm going to use them obviously in Warmaster Bretonians, because they're the models, but also in, I'm playing a Warmaster medieval game against Jim Breach planned for when we're not out, where we're out of this situation. And there you go. That's the like it's straight out of that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's just a little bit of imagination. And, you know, again, one of the things I really like about War Master, this idea that you have lots of different models, but they count as something standard in the list. So when people say, you know, what are the stats for Phoenix Guard in a high elf list? You go, oh, they're spearmen. They're cool spearmen, but it's just the unit you give the magic banner to. Or it's something nice that you painted and stuck on the tabletop. Yeah. And that idea that you don't have some ultra rare, uber expensive thing to buy on eBay to kill your opponent, I really like that. You know, you can pull whatever you've got, and if you want to have a modeling project, which I really like that, because I spend a lot of my time thinking about how I can do different things, because for me the model making and the collecting part is more fun than the playing part, all the other people I met meet playing notwithstanding, but I really like that part of it, and it just gives me an excuse to be really creative. Yeah, so it's nice.
Phoenix Guard are spearmen whose tips don't break off. That's what bonus. Yeah. If you play high elves, you're going to be sub-dubbing every fucking time you use them.
Yeah. Or you can do what Dave Sisko did, and you can chop off all the spears, you can replace them with like pins. Oh, I was in Boston about a year ago, and I went out to play Dave a couple of games on, I bunked off the conference for a day. And Dave is such a lovely guy. He brought his high elf army, I brought some ogres. And he's done that with all the models. My God, if you're doing that, seriously, you need to plasters on your fingers the whole game. They are dangerous fucking
deadly.
Really unbelievable. Still, lovely, Dave. Thank you. It was a great couple of games, even though I lost both of them.
So we're going to have to wrap it up, but we're going to have to get you back because we've got more to talk about on a different thing. Because you also, in the second War Master role, you look after the trading forum.
Oh, yeah. Okay, trading group.
Talk about it.
I'd love to come back and talk about that. I think the trading group's been interesting. We've had probably more new members in the last month than we've had in the last year. I'd like to, again, there's lots of people I want to thank here. Adam House, who is a Canadian guy who I only know over the internet. We nearly met when I was in Toronto in September last year, but didn't work out. Adam's been very good at adminning the group when I'm asleep, because our time zones kind of overlap with one another. And we've had lots of people joining. I hope that is more people wanting to get into War Master because it's interesting, rather than people wanting to offload stuff they've got in the cupboard. But if people want to offload stuff in the cupboard under the current circumstances, then I hope it goes to new players. So the trading group, I do need to spend some time looking at updating the buyer's guide. Spoiler alert, don't expect any massive changes in things, plus or minus 10-15%. Things are War Master is still a sought after game, and the models are still well sought after, but I need to get Quentin to have a look at the Quentin Jano in New Caledonia, millions of miles away from the rest of us. Quentin pays a lot more attention to fit to eBay these days than I do, so he and I need to come together and look at that.
One thing I would say is maybe Araby aren't as scarce as was once imagined. Somebody seems to have a load of Araby.
Okay, so my week in War Master. This is the first week I've had to do some actual moderating of posts on what I thought was a nice, respectful forum for adult people. We had a very nice guy. He's a French guy called Alexandre. He lives in Seoul with, I guess, his girlfriend. And he posted up some listings for basically mint, perfect condition, blister completely undamaged, card uncreased, like the perfect thing you would have got from the shop, Arbery blisters. He copied the stuff out of the pricing guide, which I think was a reasonable price for those things to go in that condition. And some people were not that kind. I don't want to be like the school teacher going, you have been naughty. But with one guy in particular who just had post after post after post of what he thought was funny, it wasn't, you know, one tongue-in-cheek post is fine, but to just go on and on, it was out of order. Some people ought to have known better. I've warned a few people and it's over. But I'm just surprised. I'm disappointed, but, you know, that's the way the world is.
We're boys.
No, goes unpunished. So we'll have to have you on to talk, because there's a lot to talk about there. There's a buyer's guide. There's loads of things. We'll schedule that for the future. But I like to keep it no more than about an hour and 20, and we're almost there. So we need to wrap it up. So thanks for all the work you've done, Chris. I'm sure you're going to get a lot of good feedback, and I'm sure it's. If it's not there, it's very, very near.
Yeah, no, please. Okay, so for the listeners, the take-home messages, please take the list, play with it, try it. Give us your feedback on the Facebook group. Private message me through the Facebook if you want to. But it's only by your input that we turn this into something that we're all comfortable with. So please, we're interested in what you've got to say, but please try the list out before you try any variations to it. So thank you. Yeah. Your input. Thank you, Barry.
I'm going to try and break it this weekend, as usual. So this was episode 141, updating up on army rules with Paul, who's disappeared again because he's found a button that turns it off. Oh, there he is. Hello. And our special guest, Chris Orr. Thanks for all your time and effort, Chris. Okay, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks. Stay safe. Take care.
Stay safe. Stay alert.
Good night. Thank you. Clap for Paul.
Stay alert.
Stay alert. Yes, our country needs alerts. Stay alert.
Stay alert. Good night.
Would you like to know more?